True Crime Today.
This is the ongoing story of a small Idaho town and its residents, a tightly knit community that hasn't seen a murder since 2015, an environment where one thought they could feel safe and secure until a quadruple homicide stole the lives of four young souls on a mid-November evening, leaving far more questions than answers. Where will the investigation lead, and how do we get there? This is the University of Idaho Murders podcast. Four killed, for what?
Welcome to another edition of the program. Going to go over some of the newer things that we've learned in the last 24 hours. I wouldn't say anything, I guess, groundbreaking, but a couple nuggets of information that have come out that just continue to slowly put more and more pieces of this horrible puzzle together. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you download podcasts so you don't miss any updates to this program and breaking updates. We do appreciate that. And we're trying to bring you basically just fact-based information as it comes in. And it has been rather slow, as you may have gathered, over the last week or so for an investigation of this magnitude. I'm here on today's episode, Tony Bruschi, so is Sean. And thus far this week, what have your thoughts been?
You know, dare I say much of the same. It's just we've almost become addicted to every single day. We're checking in, looking for an update, looking for a lead, looking for a person of interest. But again, I would have to imagine that law enforcement is doing a lot more than we know about. But when you gave an update a few episodes ago of the contradictory information, it is targeted, it isn't targeted. Again, you have to defer to the experts, but you're just looking for some clarity.
Yeah, and we're going to hear directly from Kaylee's mother a little bit later in the show with exactly what she said about that when asked her opinion about whether it was targeted or not and what they'd been telling the family or not telling the family. We'll listen to that. But that's really kind of how the week has been. It's been very much... it was targeted. It's not targeted. And maybe the property was targeted, which I don't even quite understand. I read the legal definition of it the other day, and I'm still confused why they would use that sort of a phraseology. To say the least, it's been confusing, and there seems to be some sort of breakdown in communication. Between who's
Moscow. Yeah. Moscow Police Department has been as transparent as they can, even though we've not heard a lot of updates. They do provide updates online as of December 3rd.
They haven't had yesterday. They haven't had a news conference in forever.
Over 2,600 emails they've received via their tip line email address. More than 2,700 calls to that tip line. Over 1,000 pieces of digital media have been submitted to the FBI link, over 110 pieces of physical evidence, and approximately 4,000 crime scene photographs. So,
and how much
myriad
of, that,
of information?
I mean, it sounds like a lot of stuff, but how much of it is just the same stuff that is on every message board on this, and it's been sent in hundreds of times each? How many unique pieces of evidence is what I'm wondering that they're getting? And I hope there's stuff. I'm hoping there's more to this than we know. There's obviously a lot of chatter everywhere about who did it, and so many people getting their names ripped through the mud this week, and who knows where this is going to land. But of course there has been some speculation, and as of now they are on the cleared list of the roommates. But take a listen to this. They finally broke their silence just the other day during a vigil, and they wrote statements to be read. And this is from that vigil the other day.
My name is Chris. I'm one of the pastors here, and I'm going to be reading two different letters, one from Dylan and one from Bethany. This is from Dylan Mortensen. To Zanna and Ethan, the two best friends but perfect pair together. They had this unstoppable, loving relationship. They both would look at each other with so much love. Everyone knew they were the perfect duo. They both had this fun, passionate, crazy, but good energy. They both were the kind of people who cared about everyone and would help anyone. Xana was the life of the party. If she was there, it was going to be great. But Xana was so much more than a girl who could just have fun. She was strong, intelligent, hardworking, and a beautiful person. Xana was taking this math class, a class I was also taking, and the amount of effort and hard work she put into that class was the only reason I tried to pass it. She would constantly uplift me and tell me I could do it. Xana was also a very big people person. She could make a conversation with anyone, any friend and any parent. She loved the parents, especially the moms. Every tailgate, she would talk to a new mom, get their phone number, and text them. Everyone that got the chance to know her loved her. I was and am so lucky to have experienced a life with her, as her being one of my closest friends. I didn't know Ethan until this semester. I wish I would have gotten to know him more. He was so sweet and loving to Xana. Xana was like his whole world, and you could see it in him. While Ethan was like a friend, he was also like an older brother to me. I got to experience what an older brother would be like. He was this goofy guy who I could make sarcastic jokes to. Every time I saw him, he'd give the sarcastic jokes right back. He was also loving to my friends and to me. He cared, like Xana, about everyone. He was easygoing and easy to talk to. I'm glad I got the time I had to know Ethan, and I'm so thankful to have gotten to know such an amazing person. I know somewhere Xana and Ethan are together keeping each other company, watching us and telling us it's okay and that we have each other. Maddie and Kaylee, the inseparable duo, the two best friends that were like sisters. Maddie and Kaylee were like second moms to me. They taught me a lot on how to be a responsible adult, but also how to live life happy. They changed the way I look at life and how to enjoy life to the fullest. Maddie was the cute ray of sunshine. She didn't ever have a negative thought in her mind. I don't think I ever have seen Maddie stressed about anything. This happy-go-lucky kind of girl who loved life to the fullest. I got to know Maddie last year and loved her when I met her. And then I got the chance to get closer with her this year. I'm so lucky to have gotten to experience life with her in it. She had this passionate love for everyone. Everyone who knew her got to feel her love. And she was so compassionate to everyone and wanted everyone to be happy. She got this new hot pink puffy jacket and wore it everywhere. She was a very big pink color kind of girl. She would do this cute little skipping dance every time I saw her. She just had these cute little mannerisms that I loved. She was such a beautiful person inside and out.
So that's the letters that were written in tribute to their roommates, by the two surviving girls downstairs. Thoughts on that?
Kind of just hit you like a dump truck of emotion.
Certain people be you.
Yeah.
The human element to this, we're so caught up in finding a suspect and getting justice for those. That is a heartfelt, well-written. You have to feel for the surviving roommates to be painted as suspects. And while they're having to fend off all of people they don't know saying that they did it, and even people they do know that didn't know them necessarily that well, that were obviously suspicious. Mm-hmm. In addition to having to do that, you then have to mourn losing two of your friends. So yeah, just a well-written, heartfelt feelings that hopefully the families of those that were taken away can get some comfort in that, hearing that from their two friends.
It certainly doesn't sound like the letter of a killer at all. So I think the speculation on those two to begin with was ridiculous. But at the same point, I understand where there's curiosity, and not necessarily about them, but more so just about the logistics of this whole damn thing. And because there's things that just don't add up. I mean, we're talking about how this horribly bloody scene where they're stabbed multiple times, enough that it's dripping down the side of the house on the outside. It seeps out. And yet, there's visibly, at least to the naked eye, and it's a snowy setting, there's no blood. There's no sign of someone leaving that scene. I guess the only thing I could say, this is something they've just not said to us yet, is did they change clothes in there? And that's part of the evidence that, you know, I don't know how you would not be leaving a trail of evidence unless you changed in that house.
What's interesting is all of us are trying to come at it with all different angles, and we're trying to make sense of something that we have never experienced, and we can't compare it to anything. So the only thing we can try to make sense or come up with a conclusion, solve it, if you will, is to just think of it hypothetically. And everything from a logistics standpoint of, if someone were to do this, then this must happen, or this must happen. All of those must-haves, at least what we're being told and what we can find out, it isn't there.
Yeah. Kaylee's father revealed on, what was this on? I believe this was on Fox News yesterday. The entry point that they believe was used was the sliding glass door on the second floor. And I believe entry point is the key thing here, because I don't know if they ever have identified an exit point or if that's the same place. Take a listen.
With common sense, but I'm not a professional, so I want to specify that. But they've said the entry point was the slider or the window. It was in the middle floor. So to me, he doesn't have to go upstairs. His entry and exit are available without having to go upstairs or downstairs. Looks like he probably may have not gone downstairs. We don't know that for sure, but he obviously went upstairs. So I'm using logic that he chose to go up there when he didn't have to. And I can kind of tell by my daughter's texts, messages. She didn't call 911. She wasn't saying anything along the lines of like she had heard something or she was in fear. So I'm just putting the dots together. As far as the investigators, they're very tight-lipped and they're keeping everything close to their vest. And I understand that. And I'm probably not the right person to share all these things with. So I'm just trusting them that their case is super tight and they don't really need to reach out to the community. And
so entry point being the sliding glass door that takes out what some were asking about with the key lock door that has the keypad on it. Everybody already saying, well, a lot of people already knew it. Well, it sounds like the sliding glass door was left open as well.
Which, if this comes down to a situation of similar to somebody looking to break into a vehicle where they're just going around a parking lot, pulling on the door of the vehicles, and if it's open, then they choose to break in that vehicle. If this is something that they were going around the neighborhood looking for an open door of a home, that's one thing if you're looking to steal. But it's just very, very eerie to think that somebody is randomly going around a neighborhood looking for an open door to kill people.
What I'd be wondering about, too, is their assurance that that door would be open or unlocked, unless, you know, sometimes people have sliding glass doors that just don't work anymore and they've never gotten fixed. Was it one of those things where it was just kind of generally known because people had been to the house and hung out that they would have knowledge of this door locking or not locking or being locked or unlocked? Or was it just, I'm going to try this door first, and then if that doesn't work, then I'll go down to the keypad if I have to.
In addition to the lock itself on a sliding door, there is an article that was just released that a father of one of the victims was asked to come over and fix a bedroom door lock a week before the killings. There's no official word of what bedroom door he was asked to help with, but it looks like Zana's dad believed her daughter's bedroom door had a lock visited the home a week before her death to fix it.
But if they weren't having a party that night in the house, I could see why you would lock that when you got a bunch of people over. I'm going to assume that, yes, there's a lock there, but if they're all good with each other, I'm doubting a lot of people are sitting there locking their doors in their house.
It's a situation where, I mean, yeah, to your point, the only reason that you would want to lock your bedroom door is if there is an event going on, or you just more of an annoyance. You don't want people in your bedroom. But yeah, from a safety issue, this is just whether it's a key lock or whether it's a code. Bottom line is how someone got into the home, and more so the why of why you would want to commit these acts. Again, it's we're saying the same thing over and over, but to try to break down something and make sense of details, they're a mystery, and all we can do is keep people in the know of what factual information has come out and try not to speculate or spread or start any rumors.
Yeah, and that's been the hard thing for people who were not even trying to spread any rumors at all this week. There was so much misspeaking going on because of the constant back and forth of, was it targeted? Was it not targeted? And the city prosecutor, as well as the police, both saying almost different things two or three times back and forth. Kaylee's mother talked about that with Fox yesterday on her thoughts on the targeting of this.
They have told us that it was targeted, but they told us they can't tell who. We asked specifically, and they said, we'll try to get that information to you. And they got back to us a day or so later, and they said, we're sorry, we can't give you that information. But then a day later, we saw in the news that it was not targeted. Or they think the whole house was targeted. But
I'll cut to the chase.
Yeah.
Their means of death don't match.
Maddie's
they don't.
And Kaylee's cause of death, it does not match based on the autopsy report.
They don't match.
Yeah. Would indicate that one of them.
He doesn't have to go up the steps. Let's stop playing games, guys. I need somebody to step up and be an alpha, be somebody to be a leader. Don't make me do it. I don't want to do it.
So basically saying the means of death don't match. My assumption there would be one was far more severe than the other. One, my guess, you know, it's probably something along the lines of one, you know, was stabbed, and, you know, maybe the other was another means in which a knife was used, but the means of death was not just the stabbing, you know?
The varying levels of how gruesome one's death was over another, you know, not even going to speculate on that, but you just have to feel for the dad, who you can just hear in his voice that we talked about a few episodes ago, how you can have enough composure to talk to the media, to give interviews with such sense of courage and calmness. And a dad, his daughter was lost in yeah. such a gruesome, tragic way. And you can tell that he is rightfully so getting to a breaking point, understanding that all law enforcement involved have to keep their cards close. But at the same time, this is my daughter, and we are into yep. this for more than a day or a week or several weeks. And you say you can't give me or my wife information, which on one hand I can understand, but then information is released to the public, not the parents of one of the victims, that then contradicts itself.
Yeah.
So you can't have it both ways. You can tell me I can't give you any information, even though your daughter was tragically killed. But then days or hours later, there's information released that makes zero sense. And I can 100% empathize with him. And I would be equally, if not more, frustrated and confused.
And as heard in his other comments that were made to Fox earlier in the week,
they put certain people between you and the officers that are making things happen. And those people are like lawyers, and they don't want to say anything, and they don't have the guts to come up and be alpha and be like leaders and say, hey, we might say something that's wrong. We're going to take that hit. So the officers, they look me straight in their eyes. The lead detective looked me in his eyes. I have no doubt he's working as hard as he can. But somebody isn't communicating. There's nothing being released. It seems like they're trying to suppress the story. We want to put rewards out. They're like, don't do that. Yeah, I get it. Your town doesn't want to have reward posters posted all over when you come and you do your rush. You're not going to get a lot of students if they see those things. But this community is not going to heal until this guy's pulled off the streets. It ain't going to happen. Think it through. It's not going to happen. He has to be off the streets. We all are working for the same thing.
So obviously lots of frustration there in his voice of just how things have been kind of unfolding throughout the week.
In addition to the three, of course, four total victims, but three of the victims that lived at the residence. And then, of course, the two surviving roommates. The only other piece of new information, which many of us probably already know, that detectives are aware of a sixth person listed on the lease at the residence, but do not believe that individual was present during the incident. So this should be nothing more than a name on a lease. But again, dot, dot, dot. Does that have anything to do with anything? Could that be something? Why did investigators just release that information now that there is a sixth roommate on the lease when we only knew about five?
Exactly. I mean, was it just an oversight? One of those things where, maybe we didn't know this, or we didn't think anyone needed to know that, or cared. I don't know. I mean, you have to examine so many different thought processes on who released what, when, or didn't, and how did they get there? And for a town that hasn't seen a homicide since, 2017? So 7 years, some of these processes of thinking on how you handle it, they're a little different than the stolen bicycle or the drunken and disorderly, and may not be known how to handle as well as others. I don't know. I think they're trying to do the best that they can. I mean, it really does appear with the resources that exist, and they are getting a lot more this week. But, you know, if you wanted to go down, you know, the conspiracy rabbit hole or anything like that of, you know, is there some sort of slow reason for this or that, someone's already found some directions on that on some of the online message boards and Reddits and whatnot. And I don't know. I've been trying to dig into one of those and try and find any sort of facts to the rumors. There's a little bit that's out there. And if you were to play that game, there is an individual in this case that has very, very high connections throughout the state, where if one wanted to say something could be covered up, it probably could. But I would imagine that if you look at every single child that was involved with these people, you would probably have quite a few that are high up in different places in the state. That doesn't mean they're a murderer. But it's interesting.
And of course, as much as there is the opportunity to go down that rabbit hole of this rumor and that rumor, Moscow PD is doing their best, even though they've contradicted themselves, to keep the information under control, the rumors under control. Their latest update is they do not believe, or their view has not changed in their belief, that the murders were a targeted attack. However, investigators have not concluded if the target was the residence or its occupants. So take that for whatever you think it means. And speaking of the residents, they are nearing completion of gathering evidence and information at the residence, which from a side of the victims' families and the owner of that property that probably met these victims when they signed their lease, and they're going to be given the keys back to the home. And we were doing some investigating on just how that looks logistically when a law enforcement agency releases the crime scene back to the rightful owner. They don't bring in a heavy duty cleaning company before they give you the keys. No. And from again, whether you know these victims or not, or you're just an owner of a rental property in some college town throughout the country, can you imagine getting the keys and having to go into that scene? I couldn't do it.
I mean, I've heard horror stories like that where, I mean, it wasn't involving this specific case, but of people who had a loved one, you know, killed in some horrific way, whether it be a murder or a horrible accident or something. Yeah, they get the body out of there. But once the crime scene is done and they've gotten everything that they need, they're not scrubbing anything down. I mean, it's blood, it's gore, it's, you know, it's all still there. Whatever they didn't, you know, need, it's going to be there, and it's not them that are going to clean it up. So, I mean, it's such a horrible, horrible thing to think about, but that's one could only hope that in something like this, you know, they're aware that, you know, there's going to be that sort of stuff there. And one would say there are professional companies that do go in and clean that. If it were me, I don't think I could walk into that. I would say, just, you know, get the salvageable items out, clean them. I don't need to see the scene.
We can only hope that the silver lining, for lack of a better term, is when the relinquishing of the residence does occur, that there is a person or person in custody to try to grab onto something that is not terrible, then even more, and the mystery continues.
With the scene likely to be released soon, Brian Anton was reporting last night of the investigators leaving the Moscow house again. They hadn't gone in very often, but it appeared just from observation outside that there was quite a bit of activity in the downstairs area of the house, including evidence markers being brought out, which usually that would be happening fairly early on. But they apparently left with several paper bags worth of evidence last night. And just what they took, why they took it, I don't know. But just a little interesting update on the observation of the house.
And again, this is speculation, but with results being known, with some DNA, results have been given to local law enforcement. And again, in not speculating, but would you think that there is additional evidence that they're gathering for the first time when the three entered the home last night? Is it to compare results that they have received back? Again, so many questions, and rather than speculating and hypothesizing, trying
there was some reason
have those answered by somebody else that is higher pay grade than both of us, and then we will pass that information along to you.
I mean, they obviously didn't just go in there to poke around. There was a reason. They were going to get some things that pertained to some sort of lead or clue to see if it moves anywhere. So I think they were honestly just doing their jobs as to why they were downstairs. I don't know. I mean, that could have also easily been things that they could remove from the scene that were needed by the two survivors that really didn't pertain to anything. That could have been that too. I don't know. I don't know how that all exactly works, but it's them doing something and seeing activity is encouraging as hopefully they can have more progress this week than we've seen the last four. Thank you guys for listening. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you download podcasts. You don't miss any episodes of this and breaking updates as we get them throughout the week. This podcast, University of Idaho Murders Podcast, for Killed for What, created with the podcast True Crime Today from Real Story Media. You can also follow True Crime Today wherever you download podcasts for more on this story and other true crime stories. Until next time, for Sean, I'm Tony. Thanks for listening. Before Killed for What?